More than 20 veterans take their own lives every day in this country, and it turns out most of them never sought out the help that was available. This morning, the VA is sending a message to local veterans. There is help as we mark National Suicide Prevention Week. Good Wednesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, what's being done to address a public health crisis in America? Veteran suicides. You can get on the line now and connect with us at 549-2937. Then later, how public art can transform this city. Plus, don't miss a special treat later in the hour, a live in-studio performance from the amazing flamenco guitarist Goliath Flores. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, the recent deaths of Chef Anthony Bourdain and fashion designer Kate Spade really shone a light on a topic that is approaching a public health crisis in America, suicide. A new Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report finds an uptick in suicide rates in nearly every state since the new millennium. Now, although the suicides that often make headlines are about celebrities, there is another often overlooked group dealing with a staggering number of deaths by suicide, veterans. According to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, about 20 veterans die by suicide each day, and they account for 18-20% of all suicides in America. Not only that, the VA reported new statistics just this week showing that the average daily number of veteran suicides has always also included the deaths of active duty service members and members of the National Guard and Reserve. So, here in Northeast Florida, our large community of active duty service men and women and veterans are really being impacted by this. And often they don't know where to go to get the help they need, or they're reluctant to seek help. So this morning we're going to share some potentially life-saving information, because guess what? This is National Suicide Prevention Week. Here with more, we're pleased to welcome Catherine Eicher. She's the lead suicide prevention coordinator for the VA in North Florida and South Georgia. Good to see you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Also with us, Daniel Henry. He's the public information officer for the same region for the VA. Good to see you.
Hey, good to see you as well.
And as we talk about National Suicide Prevention Week, particularly veteran suicides, we want to hear from all the veterans and veteran families out there, or anyone who's struggling or knows someone who is. What are your thoughts and questions, concerns? Call us right now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to First Coast Connect at wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or let us know what you're going through on our Facebook page. All right, Catherine, let's begin with you. Suicide prevention is the VA's number one clinical priority, and it's obvious why. When you look at these statistics, they're really alarming.
Yes, they are. We are facing such a national crisis when it comes to veteran suicide. Just to follow up on what you had said about our 20 veterans a day that are dying by suicide, that is astronomical. 14 of those veterans are not even connected to the VA healthcare systems. So, and that is approximately 20% of all suicides in our veteran population makes up less than 9% of the population. So statistically, this is off the charts.
It is. And so particularly female veterans, I understand it even more than male veterans, are at risk. We can talk about that in a moment. But the VA has studied this. There are reasons for this, and they have been in place for many years. Let's talk about the reasons why veterans are so at risk.
Sure. So in 2016, we released our most comprehensive data report that's ever been done on veteran suicide. And we found that in studying over 50 million records, that there are some veteran-specific risks that occur. So, and those are frequent deployments to hostile environments, service-related injuries, physical or sexual assault while in the military. And and we can see that these would be certainly risk factors for our veteran population.
It's National Suicide Prevention Week. Give us a call, 549-2937. Daniel Henry, the big issue, it seems, over the years has been getting the message out to veterans that they don't have to suffer in silence. There's a lot happening this week around Florida, isn't there, at all of the state's VA clinics to get people the help they need?
Absolutely. And again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to have us on the air today. It's amazing. It's been 1 year since we had this conversation last year, and we had the wonderful opportunity to partner with PBS last year in conjunction with the Ken Burns documentary, where we actually reached a lot of veterans. We reached a number of veterans, and some great things came out of that by opening up conversations between our organization, Veterans Affairs, and active duty personnel. This week, across the state, we're partnering with the state of Florida, Florida Department of Veterans Affairs, and we're having essentially a suicide prevention stand down series of fairs at all Veterans Affairs facilities across throughout the state, in conjunction again with FDVA, where we're going to have booths and suicide prevention coordinators there available, not just in North Florida and South Georgia where we cover, but throughout the state at all the VA facilities, where we'll have informational booths and information for people to go out, for people to come out and get information from us. To have veterans so they can have access and let them know that if they're in crisis or they're having problems or they know a veteran who's having problems, it doesn't have to be a veteran that comes in, but a family member can come in and know that they have access to us.
Sure. And if you're just tuning in, here's the number to call if you feel you're in crisis or you have a family member. You just call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. We'll repeat that several times during this segment. And let me ask you, Catherine, too, as a follow-up. We've known for years that more than 20 veterans commit suicide each day. Now the VA is out with new numbers showing that actually some of those suicides are still active duty. Certainly. Servicemen and women, not just people who've retired from active service.
Certainly.
And that's something that is just really so upsetting to hear about. And so as we talk about this, if you're still on active duty, perhaps you might feel as though you cannot seek help because of the stigma associated with getting psychological counseling or the support services that Sure. someone might need. How can veterans get past that? They might be afraid. If the VA knows or my supervisor knows I'm struggling, will I get that promotion? Will I get that assignment? That's a big issue, isn't it?
Sure, certainly. So that there is a big stigma around veteran suicide and in suicide in general. It's a topic that we as a society do not feel comfortable talking about. And there's a lot of myths and misinformation regarding suicide. If a veteran or an active duty or anyone is suffering, they can call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, the Veterans Crisis Line, and remain anonymous and still be able to access local resources within their area. But the biggest message that we want to get out to people is that you are not alone in the suffering that you are enduring. We are here to help you. We want to help you. And we want to create opportunities for individuals to come to the VA to talk to our responders so that they're able to link to whatever services they may need.
The services are there if you call the Vets Crisis Line. Again, that number, 1-800-273-8255. You can also text 838-255, or you can go to the website visitveteranscrisisline.net. We'll repeat all that again before we wrap this up. But right now, let's go to some of your calls. It's National Suicide Prevention Week, and it's a public health crisis, but especially for veterans and active duty servicemen and women, it's an extreme public health crisis. Nearly 20% of suicides in this country come from the veteran and military population, and they only make up, 5% of the entire population? So that tells you something. Let's go to Anthony in Orange Park. Hey, Anthony, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for bringing this to light. Here's what we have to deal with. Is I'm a veteran, so here's the challenge that the person like myself on the other end of the phone got to deal with. There's three different silos that we have to deal with. One is when somebody takes a phone call at the VA hospital or the VA outpatient clinic, they don't even know who's on the other end of that phone, who's cycling on that threshold of might be suicidal. So you put on a a labyrinth of holes, weight, this, that, or whatever. And that veteran right there that's on the other end of that phone, that was the threshold to make sure he got help. And so sometimes there's some indifference with people on the other end of the phone dealing with veterans, period.
Okay. And so that's the first obstacle, Anthony. You said there are others.
There are others, but I mean, there's not enough time for me to go into it, but we just got to deal with that. Let's train the people at the VA with some proper phone etiquette to make sure that veteran that calls in, that cycling into that, either in that threshold or cycling around that threshold of suicide, to take that phone call and deal with the people on the other end of the phone like they are an actual human being and not like a disposable plate.
Did you have that experience yourself?
Absolutely.
How'd you get through it?
I just got off the phone and I just had to meditate. I had to do some deep breathing, and it was rough, but I just had to deal with it.
Where were you deployed to the Middle East? Where did you serve, Anthony?
No, I'm a Desert Storm veteran. I went through a lot of different things while I was on active duty. I've been out since 1993, but you know, I struggle with PTSD. I struggle with a lot of stuff, but I just basically got a cowboy up and know that I got a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old that I got to raise, and I got a wife. So suicide really ain't an option because I just can't leave my family here without me.
Right, of course. But, you know, you said you have to cowboy up. You know, I think a lot of veterans, especially the guys, feel like they have to tough it out. But that can often lead to despair when they reach a point where they just can't tough it out anymore. Have you been in that place? And what do you, besides the VA training the first people to take your call, training them, what else do you think the VA should be doing?
There's more problems or more questions than answers. The first part is just, we got to train our people at the VA, at the hospitals, at the outpatient clinics that, you know, when a veteran comes in for services, you just don't know where they are psychologically. So we got to deal with people. These are human beings, not disposable plates. We're not rats in a maze. We're actually human beings.
Well, Anthony, I really thank you for the call and giving us your honest feedback. That's Anthony down in Orange Park, a Desert Storm vet. Daniel Henry, he's saying loud and clear the way that the first contact occurs with veterans seeking help needs to be improved. What do you think?
I think he's absolutely right. I think we, as an organization, always need to do a better job, and we need to take feedback like this from veterans, and we do take feedback like this from veterans. I would love to say, you know, we're perfect at the VA. We are not, and we own that. And I appreciate Anthony taking the time to call in and expressing his concerns. We never want to be in a position where we're shutting somebody out who is actually reaching out for help. So I appreciate that. That's something I can bring back to my organization. And frankly, we need to do a better job, and we'll do it.
Mm-hmm. And just to follow up, and I want to thank Anthony for calling in and sharing his story. One thing we have done is for our veterans that are in crisis is that we have a direct link when they call one of our VA hospitals, is that if they press 7, they can be directly connected to the Veterans Crisis Line.
Jessica is on the North Bank of downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Jessica. Good morning.
Hi. Can you hear me this morning?
Yep. Go ahead.
So I just wanted to point out that regarding stigma for psychological help or issues dealing with depression, I went to a recruiter for the Army and then also for the Navy and was told that I was ineligible to even be enlisted because I was on antidepressants. And I had to be off of them for 6 months or else they didn't feel that I could be able to handle a firearm. And, you know, I think that's kind of a ridiculous message to be sending, especially when they have these high suicide rates for even active duty military. what does that say that I'm supposedly unstable enough to even join if I'm on an antidepressant, when honestly, I credit those antidepressants as giving me a new lease on life and helping me get through some very difficult circumstances.
Okay, thanks for that. What about that?
Well, you know, Veterans Affairs, we don't set the criteria for recruiting. I think that's one more attuned to DOD.
But still, so, that seems like a valid criticism of this. If you're on antidepressants, you can't mm-hmm. serve, or at least that's what she's saying.
Right, right. And again, thank you for her to call in and bring this to our attention. And it does add to the continued stigma of you're afraid to seek help because of what people will say, what they'll believe, because you're on an antidepressant. It's just, you know, mental health is it's the same as any kind of medical condition. It's like trying to psychologically control having diabetes.
Yeah, so, sure. It seems as though the challenge for the VA is to really foster a change in military culture, which is easier said than done. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a big part of your hurdle here, Catherine.
It is. It is. And we're continuing by having events like what we're having this Friday. We are opening up the VA and we're creating an opportunity to hear from our veterans, from our active duty individuals, from veteran loved ones and community providers to come in to talk to us about and have this open dialogue regarding veteran suicide.
Veteran suicide at crisis levels in this country. This week is National Suicide Prevention Week. And as we speak with the VA on the show right now, we're taking lots of calls from veterans out there. In a moment, we'll tell you what is happening across Florida this week to help the veterans that are struggling out there. Let's go to Rachel at the beaches right now. Hi, Rachel. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm on my phone in the vehicle, so I hope you guys can hear me okay.
Yep, you're fine.
So I wanted to call in as a female veteran who's been through the VA system now for quite a few years. I was in Afghanistan in 2002, a couple months after September 11th, and I got off active duty shortly thereafter. The experiences I've had with the VA over the years have definitely not been ideal. The most recent experience that I had here in Jacksonville was going to my regularly scheduled yearly female wellness exam, or whatever you call it, with my clinician. And it was the first time that I was going to the new female clinic here in Jacksonville that they opened up. Very stressful situation. I get rather stressed out, you know, full of anxiety whenever I have to go to the VA anyway. So this day going to a new location was quite stressful for me. I am rated for anxiety and 50% through the VA, so it's certainly an issue that I deal with and I try to manage very well. But when I arrived at the clinic for my scheduled appointment, there were three females behind the counter working. There was nobody else in the lobby. And when I showed up for my appointment and told them who I was and who I was there to see and who I was scheduled to see, that they actually scheduled me for, not me. They looked at me and said, "Oh, you're not scheduled today." And I said, "I'm sorry, what? I'm supposed to see my doctor. I've got some things that I need to talk to her about." And they're like, "Oh, she's on vacation." I said, "Well, why didn't anybody call me? You know, I have to work. I've taken the morning off of work. I'm already high stressed because I'm here and it's a new location and it's the VA in general. Why did I not at least get a phone call?" And the woman behind the counter, the three of them, one of them that was servicing me at the time, there were three behind there that overheard everything, but the one that was servicing me at the time, she asked for my information, looked my stuff up in the system, excuse me, and said to me, "Oh, you canceled your appointment." And I said, "No, ma'am, I most certainly did not cancel my appointment." So the complete lack of absolute, like, just...
So you feel that there's poor customer service, I guess. Is that the idea?
It's absolutely true. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're not suicidal. You're not suicidal, Rachel, or you haven't been.
No.
You just are concerned about the level of service with the VA. So I appreciate that call, Rachel, a female veteran calling in from the beaches. That's not a new complaint, I think we have to point out, right? Daniel.
No, it's not. And first of all, let me apologize as public affairs officer. I certainly apologize to her for the poor experience that she had. What I would encourage any veteran to do, like a lot of organizations, we have a mechanism in place when you have a not necessarily the experience you want. We have a mechanism in place for you to talk to our patient advocate and get some resolution to that. So what I would encourage anyone who has a poor experience to just ask to speak to the patient advocate and they'll address their issues for them.
Reginald is in Orange Park. Hi, Reginald. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, ma'am. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Ma'am, I really appreciate the program y'all got going on this morning. Like I said earlier, I'm a vet myself. And I just wanted to say, as far as the people, the young men and women who have issues with suicide and personal issues of similar matter, my cousin, she's a retired captain. She goes around and she talks to different VA groups, and she has several groups she meet up with, two and three, sometimes four times a week. She's on call, personal time, whatever. She does everything she can to help. And she's going through this situation. So she feels, hey, if I'm going through it, I can help other people. And maybe that'll help me. And it is. It's helping her. I know because I've been on multiple deployments and I've talked to a lot of people and it helped me out. I got my cousin's father's a command sergeant major, retired after 30-some years. And believe it or not, the guy's rough around the edges, but he's the greatest brother, greatest whatever you would ever want to have. And the man is always to the point. He don't bite his tongue. He don't pull his punches. And I think a lot of times that's what we need as veterans, because people on the outside don't understand. People who've never been to combat don't understand. And it's so much that this entails that the average person or average Joe wouldn't understand. It takes a vet to understand a vet. And yeah. I got the utmost respect for the brother that's talking right now, because it sounds like he's sincere and he's really trying to do the right thing about the vet. For a long time we had to wait in long lines and had to deal with a lot of adversity, but things are changing. And to the previous caller, I'm sorry she went through what she went through, but it is changing, and I just hope and pray she find a network that can meet her needs and
sure.
help her.
Yeah, a network, Reginald. I hear you. And that's Reginald in Orange Park. Thank you so much for that. Veterans need to plug into a network in addition to seeking help from the official channels. A group support. That's what he's saying, and it's so important.
So, again, first of all, thank you, Reginald, for calling in. And again, that's one of the reasons why we're here. Education outreach is an opportunity for us to really speak to the public, regardless. Obviously, we're here to talk about suicide prevention, but we're Veterans Affairs, and we're very keenly aware. Jacksonville is our biggest and busiest market. It's literally the biggest clinic size market in the country. We see more veterans here in Jacksonville than anywhere else. I'm a Navy veteran. I'm born and raised here in Jacksonville. So I'm very familiar with the community, the military community, the veteran community. I'm a Navy veteran. What I would say to piggyback on what Reginald talked about is this: the VA can only do so much. We're a federal agency governed by laws, and we have limits. But the public, the community, has no limits. So I encourage, I applaud his, I want to say his aunt or his cousin, I can't remember who it was, Reginald, my apologies, for her efforts to go out to the community. Mm-hmm. But what we talk about a lot of times is the VA can do so much. We can walk to the line, but the public can do so much. Mm-hmm. And we encourage folks to either volunteer at the VA or get in touch with our veteran service organizations to assist as well. And we, as our part, frankly, hold us accountable. And I appreciate the young lady, I believe it was Rachel, who called early, who talked about her experience. That's something I'll go back and talk to our leadership, because we frankly need to do a better job at that. And you know, we own that.
Lots of calls, lots of veterans waiting on hold as we talk about veteran suicides in this country. They are at crisis levels. It is National Suicide Prevention Week. And so we are connecting everyone out there to the resources that are available. The Veterans Crisis Line for anyone who's struggling or a family member is 1-800-273-8255. You can also just text 838-255 to get help, or you can go to visitveteranscrisisline.net. There's going to be a big event Friday, too. More on that in a moment. But first, let's take a couple more of your calls. Keith is in Riverside. Hello, Keith. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. I would encourage all veterans to write about their experiences. It was very therapeutic for me. I'd also like to recommend a book by Sebastian Younger. The book is called Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging. I read that book twice, and it finally helped me understand why I was feeling some of the feelings that I was having after my service. Never served in combat, but I was in more stressful situations than I care to remember. As a minority veteran, you face different challenges than some other people do. And if you do some reading, it will help you put things into context. I would point out that the VA doesn't really have any counselors. They've got a shortage of counselors that deal with the issues of race and PTSD. There's a doctor named Monica Williams who's written about that, and you can find her article online. There are factors other than just service that have an impact on how veterans feel when they come out of the service. And that's pretty much all I'll say on the subject.
Yeah, thanks for that.
I would like to say that I took what I wrote down to the VA and tried to meet with some people, trying to show them that this will help you understand what some of your minority veterans may be going through or have gone through that they haven't been willing to talk to about. But it gives you some examples of what things could be occurring or have been occurring, particularly in the Vietnam War and afterwards, that minority veterans have to deal with, both minority and female.
Thanks for that, Keith. Yeah, minority veterans, female veterans have extra layers of stress, Catherine. Veteran suicide rates are still higher among women than they are men. And you mentioned earlier, often female veterans are dealing with the fallout from sexual assault in the military, and that can drive this as well.
Right. And I also want to emphasize that it's not just female veterans, that it's male veterans that
can
many times
also, mm-hmm.
absolutely that are victim to military sexual assault. And but many times go unreported because of the fear of the backlash that they may experience by disclosing that and the vulnerability that is there after that disclosure.
Charles has been holding. Charles in Jacksonville. Hey, Charles, thanks for holding so long. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the program. I'm a former vet from the Vietnam area. And I don't know, there's a lot of stuff comes to mind here while I've been waiting, you know, for my turn. But the main reason I called was I wanted to say that two things. First off, I'd seen a program which on Scientology channel, which I'm not a big proponent of Scientology, but they brought to light the fact that there are a lot of vets that are on antidepressants, antipsychotic drugs, and that multiple drugs, and that they have seen a big issue, and they've gone all around the world actually setting up programs to get people off of these antipsychotic drugs, and they claim they're very successful at it. Now,
I gotta stop you, Charles. I don't want to give any credence to Scientology on this program. But
I'm not giving credence. Something that may be an issue.
Is that something that you've dealt with in your life? Taking antidepressants?
No, it isn't, actually.
Okay.
No, it isn't.
So
no, I haven't had that problem. My main question was about insurance, and when you list yourself as having been through a mental situation or where you've had to seek treatment for it, and that's listed on your health record, what does that do to your health coverage, you know, when those questions are on question answers from insurance companies?
Right. And you know, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's an issue for civilians too, but it's an issue for veterans especially. Thanks for that call, Charles. I appreciate that. If it's in the system that you've sought counseling, that you've been on meds, that can have a real impact on your career. And that is something that everyone in America knows, not just the veteran population, Daniel.
Well, what Katie talked about earlier was stigma. And there is frankly a mental health stigma in the United States. And and as you said, it's not mutually exclusive to the veteran population. I don't know. I know he's a veteran. I don't know if that I doubt seriously if that impacts his care within the VA, because we provide whole health care. We provide mental health care, and mental health, when people seek mental health care, that is protected information. So I can't really speak to, you know, what occurs, you know, outside, you know, when him getting a job. But if he has been having particular issues because of it with the VA or something specific to the VA, I would encourage him, feel free to contact me and I'll put him in touch with our patient advocates. And we can see if we can at least, you know, find a resolution to whatever issues he's having as a result of it.
Okay. And with all of that said, not only is the VA partnering up with the city as part of the mayor's suicide prevention challenge.
Absolutely.
You're hosting a movie night coming up for veterans. And then on the 14th, this Friday, statewide, the VA is holding suicide prevention and awareness fairs.
Correct.
Let's mention that one more time, how people can be part of that.
Correct. So at all of our locations throughout North Florida, South Georgia, we are hosting a suicide prevention event where we will have mental health and primary care professionals as well as suicide prevention coordinators at specific locations throughout North Florida, South Georgia. And we will be educating everyone, veterans, veteran loved ones, community providers about veteran suicide, because we are facing such a national crisis. And if we're able to reach veterans, veteran loved ones, community providers, then they, and we are able to talk about some of those veteran specific risks, and then they're able to reach even more people within the community, we will together will be able to lessen this rate of suicide.
So again, here's the information. If you need to call the Veterans Crisis Line, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. You can also text to the short code 838-255. And there's a website, visitveteranscrisisline.net. Catherine Eicher, Daniel Henry, both with the VA here in this area. Thanks for spreading the word this morning.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having us.
Later, don't miss the live in-studio performance by the amazing First Coast flamenco guitarist Goliath Flores. That's later. But up next, how public art can transform this city. Back in a moment.
Days are filled with social media, TV, radio, and countless websites. Especially now, you need the context that comes from the kind of journalism on WJCT. Help us keep strong journalism alive to ensure you hear the whole picture. Become a WJCT sustainer. Start your monthly donations today at wjct.org/radio or at 353-9528.
Hi. I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. It's hurricane season. Prepare now by learning your evacuation zone, updating your disaster kit to include water, non-perishable food items, a flashlight with extra batteries, a radio, and other important items. Pick up a 2018 hurricane preparedness guide at your public library and visit jacksready.com for more information. Tune your radio to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
Discover new music at the Electro Lounge Monday through Saturday nights at 9, only on 89.9 FM. We've got your chill. Tune in and enjoy fresh music from around the world.
Welcome back. Well, for more than 30 years, she's been a thought leader in the field of public art and placemaking. Barbara Goldstein is dedicated to creating and sustaining public places that engage communities through art and live cultural events. In fact, she literally wrote the book on this. It's called Public Art by the Book. Couldn't be more simple, right? Goldstein is the keynote speaker at this week's State of the Arts 2018 event presented by the Cultural Council. This is a regional conference, and it highlights everything from the value of public art to how art can create social change. And so this is going to be something happening, by the way, in the newly christened Cathedral District at St. John's Cathedral, which is a beautiful space for State of the Arts 2018. We've got a preview now as we welcome Barbara Goldstein and Christy Holacek. She's Director of Art and Public Places for the Cultural Council. Ladies, good to see you both.
Morning.
Thank you for having us.
So you are the subject matter expert on public art in America, Barbara. It's exciting to have you speak in Jacksonville, where really, there's been a movement to increase our public art presence, particularly downtown. Can you give just the 30-second elevator speech for people that don't get this, why this is so important for cities?
Well, public art can be looked at in a lot of different ways. It can be something that is a destination quality work that is iconic and helps to define a place. It can be something that is integrated into streetscape, like permanent banners or benches or bike racks. It can be temporary. It can be an event that involves lots of different people. Basically, what public art does is help to define the identity of a city and a community.
And people are just naturally attracted to places that have these type of engaging environments. Creative placemaking can transform whole blocks of cities. That it brings in foot traffic, it brings in young people, it brings in money. There's
Absolutely.
An economic benefit.
Exactly. Yes, and there have been a lot of studies that support that idea.
And so, how do you see the Cultural Council's role then, Christy, in really furthering this in Jacksonville? The whole idea of art in public places. There's just been an explosion of this in recent years in this city, which is really exciting to see.
It is exciting. It's really the gateway for all the communities in the city to come together and work as a community to develop, at least in the case specifically of art in public places at public facilities, but to develop and revitalize those public gathering spaces with public art that they are part of designing, that they own. And essentially, if that's happening all over the community, you have neighborhoods that are finding the identity and building downtown at the same time.
What are some of the most prominent examples that you could point out to people listening right now? And they might say, oh, yes, I've seen that. Now I get it. Now I understand.
Definitely. Well, my favorite project was the Mirrored River mosaic that's under the Main Street Bridge. In terms of a great example of community engagement, there were over 70 people who came together to build that mosaic, and it represented the river, and it is an aerial view of the river with beautiful mirrors and very, very activating and fun for the mm-hmm. space. And then in the community, there are a number of projects happening in Northwest Jacksonville where the communities are already coming together and they're developing private mural projects with their communities all over the streets.
Barbara, you've helped cities all over the country do this kind of work. What projects are you proudest of? What cities do you feel, you've made the biggest impact?
That's a really hard one.
Hard one to choose?
It really is. I worked in Pasadena for about 7 years, Pasadena, California, not Pasadena, Texas, and helped them to really bring together their historic preservation community and their arts community who were at loggerheads about how art should be created in their historic civic center area. I also worked in Palo Alto helping them to define a public art program, and that was fun. Also, University of Central Florida.
What'd you do down at UCF?
I helped them to develop a public art strategy for the university as a whole.
And what were the results of that? How different
is
the school?
I'm waiting to see.
You're still waiting. I see. So you have to be strategic about this. You can't just put stuff up.
It really has to do, in most cases, with building a coalition and building partnerships. So with University of Central Florida, for example, one of the things that we were looking at was how the very strong presence of arts on the campus, they have a very big arts program, both visual art and music and design, how that could be manifest on the campus so that the campus would reflect what was actually being taught there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, so it's exciting that Barbara is your keynote speaker tomorrow, Christy, at State of the Arts 2018. Now, this used to be basically, I think, a luncheon type of event. Now it's sort of expanded into a regional event, which is really exciting. What all is on the agenda for State of the Arts?
Yes, we are excited for this to turn into a full day from 9 to 4. We are featuring breakout sessions that will, there'll be three breakout sessions, and topics include civic identity. They include urban planning, creative placemaking, and then there's the lunch keynote with Barbara. And then we'll have three breakout sessions again in the afternoon, and it's featuring all the community representatives, especially arts and culture, that are really leading the way. And essentially, this work is to bring together all of these to strategically, as you say, bridge these initiatives that people are, everyone's wanting the same thing, but we're wanting to do it together. So this day allows us to come together and start to build that strategic plan.
Getting everyone on the same page, that can be easier said than done. I'm sure you've seen this in a lot of cities, Barbara, the challenge of doing that.
That's the whole key. That's the key to the whole thing. It really starts with having a group of people that are well-connected, that really care about this and want to see it happen, and then it spreads out to who their individual constituencies are, to people that are neighborhood leaders, to people that are cultural leaders. You need to really build a consensus around what's needed.
Especially when there's not a lot of public money available for this type of thing.
Absolutely. That's why partnerships come in.
Yeah. Yeah. And so creative partnerships are the key. And I guess just unleashing the creative community, which in Jacksonville, luckily, we've got a good one.
We do. It's we were at an event last night, the Artist Lounge that we host this every second Tuesday of the month. And just to look around and to see that representation of a very innovative and meaningful group of individuals, the art community is, and they're ready and they're hungry for the work. And we want to help provide those opportunities for them to create those experiences for our city.
So this, again, the State of the Arts 2018 conference coming up tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at St. John's Cathedral downtown at 256 East Church Street. Still seats available, as I understand it.
We do. We have about 20 seats left right now. So if anyone is interested to register still, they can go to theculturalcouncil.org/SOTA, S-O-T-A. They can also register on the day of the event, but capacity may be limited then.
Yeah, people always like to do that in this city. I would not advise that in this one occasion, though. Go ahead and register now for State of the Arts 2018 tomorrow, all-day event and regional conference at St. John's Cathedral with the keynote speaker, Barbara Goldstein. A pleasure to have you. Hope you enjoy your short visit here.
Thank you so much.
And also with us, Christy Holacek, Director of Art and Public Places for the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville. Thanks to you.
Thank you.
And don't go away, because a special treat is up next. A live and studio performance from, speaking of an artist, flamenco guitarist Goliath Flores. That's next.
Comcast Business Fast is a gig speed network that gets business done. Beyond Fast is technology that makes business boom. Comcast Business, Beyond Fast. Take your business beyond at comcastbusiness.com.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
More than 40% of U.S. public schools have police officers stationed on campus, and many of them are armed with tasers.
There was a 7-year-old child who was tasered, and he is autistic, and he had an outburst in class.
When police are the ones perpetrating the violence against kids. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, writer Claire Tomalin. She's best known for her biographies of Dickens and Mary Wollstonecraft, but now she's written a memoir. It's about her family, her career, and grief.
Writing about myself has not been easy. I have tried to be as truthful as possible, which has meant moving between the trivial and the tragic.
Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
America loves pickup trucks. Ford's F-Series makes more revenue than Nike, Coke, or Facebook. Pickups represent many things to many people, a can-do spirit or the great outdoors. Who's buying, who's driving, and where's the business going? Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, you're listening to musician and guitarist Goliath Flores. Goliath has made a real name for himself here on the First Coast with both mariachi and flamenco performances at gigs across the region. They are absolutely mesmerizing. Now, Goliath, I believe, has a new song out and some performances coming up across town this weekend. More on that in a minute, but right now we've got a preview as he performs right here in studio. Goliath Flores, always good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
And so you are known not only for mariachi, but also flamenco and classical guitar, even a little bossa nova and samba. You're a virtuoso of all these genres, which is so amazing.
Oh, thank you.
How'd you get to that place?
You know, it's just music has been a passion of mine since I was a kid. And I've always been interested in so many different, all the styles, basically. And the way that I write music, I never know what style the music is going to come out in. So, for example, the very last song that I released is a country song. And people are like, what? Country? Like, you're known for Latin music. I'm like, I know. But, you know, I've done R&B. Like, if you look at my queue of music that I'm working on, I have an R&B tune. And the country song I just released, and a pop song, and flamenco, et cetera.
You can do it all. Yeah. Now, flamenco, though, I think is the form you perform in that people, out of all the types of performances you do around town, that people truly are so excited about. What is it about this genre of music that is so mesmerizing, I guess, is the word?
There's several things. I think it's the mysteriousness of the music, of the meter. But at the same time, it's got an exotic sound, like no matter where you are. And also, very few people know how to do it.
And you're one of the few in town.
Yeah.
Now, you're going to be performing this Saturday at the Jacksonville Zoo and Gardens at 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And another performance Saturday at 5 p.m. in downtown Hemming Park.
Yes.
And so these will both be flamenco. And do you have...
They'll be Latin.
Latin, okay.
Yeah, the one in the zoo is mariachi, and then the one for the Hispanic Heritage Celebration in Hemming Park is going to be Latin, more Latin.
And we're going to get a little preview of that right now, which is so exciting, because Goliath is going to perform for us and close the show right here in studio. What is this number called?
Okay, this one is called Cara de Amor.
Here he is, Goliath Flores.
Okay. Llámenle a la
grúa, la llanta se ha ponchado, soy un solo pecado. Nada es cierto, todos juntos con opiniones, todos juntos oprimiendo. La voz se está cansando, la voz se va cansando de los gritos del dolor. Nada es cierto, todos juntos con opiniones, todos juntos oprimiendo. Cara de nave, cara de selva, cara de amor. Cara de nave, cara de selva,
the amazing Goliath Flores. Go see him Saturday in Hemming Park at 5 p.m. Oh, you are so good. Thank you so much for being
here. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And 9A. 1A is up next.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.